Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
Are you ready for the best real estate investing advice ever? Join Joe Fairless and today's successful real estate professional as they share it with you. Let's go.
Hello, best ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever show. I'm Joe Fairless, and I'm here with today's guest, Douglas Dowell. Douglas, how's it going?
I'm outstanding. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot. Douglas has a really interesting background because he has his JD from Washburn University School of Law. He's had a lot of experience in a lot of different areas of real estate, from being a broker assistant at Marcus & Millichap to where he is now as focused on commercial mortgage brokerage. Douglas, if you can give us, now that I've given an overview of your background, if you can give us a little bit more detail on your real estate investing experience, and then also maybe something about yourself so that we can get to know you a little bit better.
Oh, sure. I guess I'll start with I was a young boy at age 16, an impressionable lad, and saw a individual known as Carlton Sheets. Love him or hate him, he had a great infomercial on no money down real estate. And I got to tell you, I was hooked. I was like, that's fascinating. And at the same time, it was backed up by some experience. A friend of mine's dad had some rent houses, and we made some money on the side. And it kind of made the big picture make more understandable. Like, well, that's why he's doing that, is making money on the side. And I was, you can create wealth through real estate. That was awesome. And it really served me throughout my professional career. I drove my economics undergrad, finance background, and, you know, basically got a double major almost in economics and finance. And it really drove the bus. It was all toward the end goal of building wealth through real estate. And really, part of why I went to law school, even, I was like, man, imagine if in real estate I have a law degree, that would be awesome. And it's like, and honestly, looking back at it, I think that's it's almost a counterproductive move because of the student loan debt you have to take on. So listeners out there, please call me and talk long and hard about before you go to law school. But anyway, be that as it may, it's been a very interesting ride, for sure. Really spent a lot of time in Kansas City, Missouri, also from Colorado originally, and would love to get back home at some point. Tremendous opportunities in the Denver market in terms of development and joint ventures, and that's a whole nother whole other topic almost from what we're going to talk about today, but there's tremendous opportunities out there, and there always is in real estate, and really happy to be here and share what I can.
Great. And once you graduated and got your JD from Washburn School of Law, you went straight into practicing law, is that correct? Where you did
actually
litigation?
No, I didn't. I think I knew all along, and in looking back at it, I kind of eventually, you know, through twists and turns, ended up being a solo lawyer eventually, which was a great experience. But looking back on it, I started off with the Kansas City Housing Authority in the governmental, basically their housing authority, and working with them on putting together affordable housing projects and stuff like that. That was a very brief stint. I really have zero patience for government bureaucracy. I just don't have the patience for it. So, you know what? I took a hop after that. I was like, okay, I wanted to check out Florida. And my girlfriend and I, at the time, we moved down to Florida, and I went to work for Marcus & Millichap down there. And again, that was a very interesting experience, but, you know, it's kind of, I like to say I'm almost the Forrest Gump of commercial real estate. I've done about everything, and I've shaken hands with about every CEO and janitor in every different context. I've managed an apartment complex for a period of time, and, you know, I've done basically everything, but I can really, man, I'm trying to think what I haven't done. It's almost kind of interesting. I've wanted to know, let my curiosity be the guide, and it's taken me some interesting places, that's for sure.
And, you know, with that as the background, knowing that you have a lot of different areas that you've worked on, and basically all of them in real estate, the focus, I think, that it'd be interesting to hear more from your perspective, knowing that you have the law degree, and knowing that, you know, you've been trained in that area, perhaps talking a little bit about, your perspective on law and how it relates to real estate investing, in particular raising money.
Oh, sure. Happy to kind of cover the waterfront on that, and I can give you a brief overview. The real interesting transition, and it's kind of an interesting arc that most real estate investors go through, they start off, I got one rent house. Now I got two rent houses. Now I got three. One of the first discussions that they're going to encounter is, do I need an entity in terms of, hey, do I need to have an LLC? And my gut answer is, until you decide you want to, you know, really build a huge portfolio, if you're going to have one or two or three, I don't know that I personally think it's worth the cost benefit. Always have great insurance. I think that's what I would recommend for everybody in every real estate context. Make sure you have a great insurance policy. And that will help a lot of what you're doing, because you'll see guys out there selling asset protection plans and stuff like that. And for the, you know, under, you know, $10 million estate, it's completely a con job, in my opinion. But anyway, but moving on, but when you decide, and here's kind of what has driven me in my career and kind of my fascination is, you know, you'll hit a point where your resources get limited. You can only, you know, buy so many houses, and you'll hit a Fannie Freddie limit, or in terms of the number of mortgages you can have. At a certain point, you're going to understand. And my big passion is commercial real estate is where you get wealthy. You can do okay in single family, and of course with the subprime, there's been an exception for that. But as a general rule, if you want to build substantial wealth, I believe it's through commercial real estate. And then you start getting into an issue. I don't have the money for that. I grew up in the trailer park, for example, and you know, and I'm halfway kidding about that. I've spent a fair amount of time in the trailer park, but anyway, my friends and family don't have the resources to do that. How do I get in that? It's cost a lot of money, and there are some creative ways in terms of master lease options that are interesting, and that's another, you know, another side topic, but really the core way, and really the kind of the tried and true method involves, you start off with creating an LLC where everyone can member manage. And this is really important. If you start off in pooling capital, for apartment complexes and whatnot, it's very, very important to be clear on, am I creating a security? And a security is an investment of money with the expectation of profit, with a due to the solely by the efforts of the promoter. And there's one other prong I'm dropping out there, but the main point is once I start managing your capital and make decisions with your capital, I have created a security, whether I wanted to or not. I've just done that, and there's some practical things to look at in terms of that, but also some practical ways to avoid it, because it is costly in terms of, and I know, Joe, you've done some stuff with this. You know it can be extremely costly to get the right legal advice, and there's an intermediate step that you can take from having, okay, let's say I've got 10 rent houses, and I want to scale up a little bit, but I'm not ready to go all in. You can pull capital as long as, and you want to definitely document this, and you want to, you know, participate in a member-managed LLC, that's a way to stay out of the securities realm. So that's kind of the intermediate step. But once you graduate into the securities realm, it's a whole other thing. There's really a couple of great exemptions you can get into, and I'm actually not I can't cite verse and line item on that stuff off the top of my head, but what I can basically do is kind of overview the primary exemptions. Regulation 506, and the primary one is 506D, is where you do a private placement with what I recommend as accredited investors, and there's a reason for that. With accredited investors, what an accredited investor means is basically there's a rule says, hey, this guy has – and they basically created a policy, and the policy was, hey, there are certain people that make so much money that we don't have to sit and worry about them too much. They're big boys, and they can handle themselves, and that's essentially the policy behind the accredited investor. They do allow unaccredited investors if they're deemed kind of more sophisticated, honestly, and there's basically the difference is they're saying they have, and I believe it's $1 million net worth excluding the house, and or an annual income if a single income of $200,000 or $300,000 joint, and those are the basic rules of an accredited investor, and that model is really the core way. When you see somebody who's amassed a significant portfolio, the chances of them are highly likely that they've done a regulation 506D private placement. Now, the game is changing to some really interesting ways where they're getting into crowdfunding and all kinds of other things. But in my mind, if you want to get started in this and you're like, I want to kind of graduate into that, there are certainly the tried and true ways of 506. And what I like about that is it's already out there. Everybody knows what kind of, you know, if it's somebody who's an accredited investor, they've been pitched this before. It's not like a completely new animal for someone, whereas crowdfunding has got some, you know, kind of newness to it. And in fact, I if I'm going to steer someone, if they're just starting out and doing this, I'd kind of go for the tried and true regulation D506. And I don't know if I'm taking that the direction you wanted to go on that.
Absolutely.
But, kind of
yeah.
Basic overview of how that process works.
Well, I think the most important thing for our conversation and for the best ever listeners out there is that we're getting as much value out of this show as possible. And I think the more you talk, the more value that we get. So I'd say.
I don't know. We could be here all day. I could crash the internet talking so long about real estate. My girlfriend will get up and walk away occasionally because I'll get on my geek rant and she'll get up and leave the room because she's like, no, I'm not doing this right now.
Out of respect for all the other people who do podcasts, I don't want to crash the internet because there are a lot of other podcasts out there. So let's get into. Your best ever advice. So what is your best real estate investing advice ever?
Oh, man. My best ever advice is joint venture, because that's the way you got to do it, but do it the right way. And my legal experience actually taught me some very hard lessons about this. I was a solo attorney, and I'm like, and I have a growth mentality is really kind of one of the core things that I think are in my soul. But I was like, man, I want to grow this business. My, it was kind of funny. I like to joke, my law, the guy I was working for at the time, decided to take a construction job in Florida. And I like to joke, I answered an ad in a paper for a free law firm to a good home. And that was basically what happened. I kind of, you know, I get this law firm and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. Now I have a law firm. That's awesome. And it's kind of funny. It's one of those things you kind of back into a lot of stuff in life. And I don't think I ever really I never really intended on being a lawyer. You know, if I look back on it, I've really, my passion was always being in real estate somehow, but here I am. I'm like, oh, okay, well, this is a business. I'm going to go for it and I'm going to scale it up. And, very shortly, you know, I kind of realized, you know, like, man, if I want to scale this, probably the best thing to do, you know what? I'll get a partner. That's what I'll do. I'll get a partner and that'll be great. And sure enough, I got an opportunity to partner with someone and without any real, I didn't really know her that well at all. And I just kind of like, hey, I'm doing this. I'm going to do this and boom. And there really wasn't any due diligence on my behalf. And in the end, we turned out to be completely incompatible as a team and had a different vision. I wanted to continue, and here's a prime example. I wanted to continue to add more partners to the firm and grow it. And she wanted to be queen of the roost, if you will. And we had a serious falling out. And in the end, it all came apart. And it's a lot of it was because on the front end, I didn't do enough due diligence on who I'm partnering with. And number two, there was not a great discussion on the front end about, okay, this is where we ultimately want to be. And I think what I will say is that you know, in life, you get a lesson. If you learn the lesson, then it's great. I think for me, it really kind of seared. I mean, because it was a painful, painful experience. And it was like, okay, this is what I learned from this is you got to have clear expectations on the front end. And what if we don't get along in the long run? And that kind of exit planning is not very common. I see that all the time. And you'll see people just, you know, and again, it's all good on the front end. It's all shiny, happy people
right
on the front end. And you always have to say, well, what if this doesn't work out? And it's not even, and I think anybody who's had any business experience at all should not be offended by that question. What if this doesn't end up working out? What if we have a change, you know, change in circumstances down the line and we don't like each other anymore, or we're not getting along, or what? You have to ask that question on the front end and be comfortable with that on the front end, because I hate to say it, but it's almost worse than a divorce from a relationship standpoint, because it affects your financial stability. And in my experience was it completely blew my world up for a number of years. It was that bad, and a lot of it was because I did not ask the right questions on the front end. I didn't know who I was partnering with. I was too, you know, again, it's yep. great to have the dream and the vision, and again, that was one of the learning experiences for me. Was Doug, you're a dreamer visionary guy, but you've got to look at the practical aspects of this and ask the critical questions about, okay, what do I know about them? Are they really somebody I really know that well, or you know, are they good to be in business with? Who did right. you ask about? And about, you know, you can go out and check, you know, do a litigation search. You can do, you can ask other people that's done business with them before. And there are a number of things you can do from a due diligence standpoint to kind of figure out, okay, who am I dealing with here? And again, I think it's really important. And again, I will say the nice thing about partnership in that context versus a regular joint venture, I like joint ventures in the real estate arena because it's more dating at that point. The way we had set it up, it was like almost a shotgun wedding. And I'd much rather like the joint venture model in real estate where you can date and figure out, okay, you might go through all your entire diligence and still in the end not really feel comfortable with someone. And if you set up your joint ventures right, you can basically say, hey, this is a one-off deal. We'll see how it goes.
Right.
If we like each other, we'll continue to do more joint ventures. And it comes down to branding, too. And this is kind of one of my experiences from it. If you have the brand and you brand a big joint venture, then it kind of gets tricky. But if you keep your separate brands kind of in your own little world and you have just a joint venture that's doing the fine things financially, that's a lot different in – From my experience, that was a huge lesson from it. If you the nice thing about real estate joint ventures is you can literally, you know, okay, we'll get in this deal, we'll check this out, we'll see what we think, and then kind of go from there. And I'm a big believer in date before marriage generally, and doubly so in the financial arena.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I would say, you know, to summarize what I believe you just said and to grossly oversimplify it, for what you said is, one, before you enter into a joint venture with anybody, do a litigation search, check their references, and make sure that you have an exit plan for the what-if scenarios.
I think that's an excellent overview, and it doesn't have to be – I don't think it has to be that complicated, and I think what you've done there, Joe, is really highlight the two most important things about it, is just having a good plan on, okay, again, asking the hard questions, what if this doesn't work, is a great point.
Yep. Yeah, and you know, I've – with the investors that I work with, you know, some are accredited and some aren't. The one of them in particular I'm thinking of, he is accredited and he asks really tough questions. And it's not and I don't take it personally because I know that he asks these questions to anybody that he would potentially partner up with because they have to be asked. And, you know, some people might be concerned about perhaps offending or maybe hurting someone's feelings. Like, what do you mean it might not work out? Well, from a business standpoint, it's simply, you know, covering your bases. I think, you know, you trust that people won't steal your horse, but you still tie up the horse whenever you go to the bar and, you know, go grab a drink if we're in the Wild West.
Yeah, and I'm a Cold War kid, and Ronald Reagan had a great quote with regard to Russia. Das Proviai, das Proviai, trust but verify. And I couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, okay. Well, good stuff. And to wrap that part up, I definitely agree with the joint venture approach because that is truly the best way to scale your business. When you can bring in other people, one, you're bringing in other people's expertise or money, but then two, you're bringing in the connections and network and a new friendship and business partner that you can have with them, and that's going to exponentially increase your business and help scale it even more than, you know, you could possibly do on your own.
Well, and I agree, Joe, and I think that when done right, joint ventures can hyper accelerate your growth. And again, being careful and having some basic wisdom behind what you do, for sure, will really, really have a tremendous impacts on your net wealth. And again, it's all about what you want in the end, and an investor has to really kind of do a soul search and say, well, what do I really want? Is it in my DNA to really, you know, run something of substantial size, or am I just looking for something to just, you know, just a couple million for my retirement plan? But I can tell you that substantial wealth is possible through real estate through this model. And
yep.
I think for people that finally see that, you kind of get like a different mindset. And I know you've already been there, you've already seen it, and the possibilities are almost endless.
Yep, agreed. All right, let's jump into the best ever lightning round. Quick hitting questions. You ready?
I'm ready to go.
All right, best ever book you've read.
Oh, one book? Oh, Joe, you're killing
only
me.
One. Only one.
Only one. If I have to say one, everybody says Think and Grow Rich, so I'm going to say Snowball, the Warren Buffett and the Business of Life.
Okay. Best ever joint venture structure.
Wow. Actually, the LLC is a great animal because you can – they did some, you know, really great things with that when it came around. It's basically you can make an LLC do anything you want, and I'm a huge fan. They're very customizable, and that they're great.
Best ever success habit that you practice.
Best ever success habit, model excellence.
Okay. Best ever internet resource you use for research.
For research, man, I have to give Bigger Pockets of props on that. They have so much stuff over there.
Agreed. Best ever quote.
I'm a Buffettologist, so I have to quote Warren Buffett and say, if you're batting 1,000, then you're in the minor leagues.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I have to admit, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and it kind of knocked me for a loop a little. Like, well, okay, that'll put an end to that.
Yeah. I don't know if I came up with this quote or if I read it somewhere, but I wrote it down whenever I thought it. It was, don't be worried if you're failing. Be worried if you're not failing.
Oh, that's great. I love it. Because it's like if you're failing, then you're trying to do something, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, what's the best ever place to reach you?
Best ever place to reach me, I love LinkedIn. I'm out there on LinkedIn. And you can look up Douglas DowellJD on LinkedIn. That's the best way to find me.
Okay, sounds good. Well, Douglas, thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add that we didn't talk about?
I really like to just kind of end with the possibilities are endless. The rule number one, there are no rules, including that one. So.
Okay, let's end with that. Thank you, sir. Talk to you soon.
You bet. Have a good day.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, you, best ever listener. Do you want more? Then head to joefairless.com, where there are tons of free videos, templates, and content to help you get deals done. And if you want Joe to personally help you reach your goals, then go to the Work with Joe tab on joefairless.com and apply to, well, Work with Joe.